Hey everyone, thanks for downloading the show. You're listening to Blast Magazine, and I'm your host, Matthew Root. Hearing here is music from the upcoming game, SOCOM 4. Today, we're going to bring you a conversation with the man who created this music.
My name is Bear McCreary. I am the composer for SOCOM 4.
That's Bear. For those of you that aren't familiar with Bear's work, it's important to understand that he isn't merely a video game composer. I think Bear's presence in SOCOM 4 is indicative of a growing trend in the video game industry, which is this crossover of top Hollywood talent. More and more we're seeing big names from the entertainment industry getting involved in the process of making games. We're talking Guillermo del Toro with his Insane project, Steven Spielberg, who was involved with the now-canceled LMNO, and big-name actors like Martin Sheen, Ed Harris, Liam Neeson. Now, I use the word talent, and I believe that's a term that applies not just to those big household names I just rattled off, but also to Bear McCreary. Although he's just 32, Bear has already become a renowned composer with a prolific career. He's got a large number of short films to his credit and several full-length features like Step Up 3D. But where he's really made a name for himself is in television. Bear's created the music for shows like Terminator, The Sarah Connor Chronicles, The Cape, Human Target, and most recently, The Walking Dead. However, the series that he's most well-known for, and the one that really put him on the map, was the remake of Battlestar Galactica. Battlestar was a massive hit, and widely regarded as one of the best shows, if not the best show, on television at the time, and the music always received similar high praise. If you've never seen Battlestar, I'd highly recommend you check it out, and listen when you do, because the music really is some of the best and most unique you'll ever hear on TV. So, let's just get right to it. This is a conversation with Bear McCreary. Wanna try to focus, I guess, first on SOCOM 4, the latest thing that you're working on?
Yeah.
First off, I'm wondering, you're composing music for SOCOM 4, correct?
Yes.
Or composed, I should say. I guess you're all done at this point?
Yes.
So okay.
I've been done for a year.
Oh, wow. Man, that's kind of a little bit of disconnect between finishing the music and the game development time, huh?
Well, with a game as technically complex as SOCOM 4, the implementation of the music is probably as important as the composition of it. So I needed to be done well in advance so that they could then take those recordings and implement them into the game, which is a pretty complicated process. So I've done other games where we finished a little closer to the final deadline. And certainly when you're doing a film or a TV show, you're finishing right at the end. But SOCOM 4 is a complex both musically but also technically. So it really required a lot of time and energy on the part of the developers. So I needed to get done. I needed to be done early.
Interesting. Okay. I was wondering too, man, there's a couple things I want to talk about that you touched on there. But I guess first, did you compose music just for the single player, for the multiplayer, both, co-op? Because I know you got a couple different modes going on.
I composed everything. So anything you hear in SOCOM 4, I wrote.
Okay. And I guess then if you wouldn't mind just walking through, you kind of touched on it a little bit already, but like the creative process and how does that work? Because if you're, you know, if you finished up a year in advance of when the game is even being released, you know, there are obviously a lot more development time left finishing the game, you know. How exactly does that work then? Are they, you know, tossing you an early build of the game? Are you sitting down and just talking about ideas and then going from there?
Well, you know, I was able to play an early build of the game, but it wasn't in any kind of format that I could take home, you know?
Uh-huh.
And beyond that, it wasn't even finished to the point that it would be particularly helpful to me. What I found was inspirational was the story, the characters, the location, the script, and the concept art. These are the things that tell me what the game is about, how, what kind of story we're telling. I mean, really, SOCOM 4 is a more narrative game than I think any other game in the franchise to date. And that's what really drew me. That's what really was appealing to me, was being able to tell a cinematic story. And write character themes and do all of the things in a SOCOM game that I do on feature films and I do on television. So the actual technicalities of how the game feels and how it works, I had a pretty good idea of that because I've played through all the other SOCOM games.
Okay, so you're a fan of the other games too?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, I am definitely a gamer, and I've played through all the other games, so I was familiar with the franchise already. So I didn't really need to like play a lot of SOCOM 4 to understand the basic mechanics of it, which is good because there wasn't much to play when I was writing.
So you're getting the early build, and you're sitting down. But like you said, you've already got a good idea of all the games you've played before, and it sounds like there's a little bit of a not necessarily a shift in direction in this game, but a little more fleshing out. You know, I guess the previous SOCOMs have really focused heavily on multiplayer, and that's not to say that they're excluding that, because that's obviously still very heavy in this game.
Yeah.
So it sounds like a lot more work went into fleshing out that single-player experience this time.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. The single-player was my main focus. The single-player is the thing that I find more inspiring, because ultimately music in a multiplayer game is ultimately not as important. I mean, I don't want to generalize, but what's important when you're playing an online multiplayer game is that you're able to hear what your teammates and your enemies are doing. So it's kind of like, you know, there's a reason that they don't blast out action music over a football game, you know, like they're
yeah.
You know, athletes need to know what's going on in their surroundings. And in a similar way, you know, the music in a multiplayer environment, it's important to kind of set the mood, but ultimately it's decorative. And music in a single-player storyline, this is interesting to me. This is artistically challenging. This is creatively satisfying, because what happens in SOCOM 4 is that does not happen in previous SOCOM games to this degree, is that you really have characters. You have actual characters that learn and evolve and are forced to make difficult ethical decisions, moral decisions. You have revelations. You have all the things that a good story needs to have. And Zipper Interactive and Sony really stepped up the game on motion capture and facial performances, and they, you know, they got great acting performances. So really, it's like you have a story here, and where there is a story, you can write really interesting narrative thematic music, and that's what really drew me. And the thing that's fun about the single player SOCOM story is that the gameplay music itself, the music that's playing while you are on missions, actually changes and evolves to reflect what the main character is learning and thinking and dealing with in the bigger picture of the story. So I found that really challenging and also really fun to be able to write music that's not just generic action music, but writing action music that still tells us something about the story. And that's something that you can do in a narrative single-player storyline. That's really exciting.
Yeah, that sounds very interesting. Is that something that's kind of, you're talking about the music changing, is that something that's kind of dynamically handled on the fly, or was that like you were given the maybe the shifting points in the story and to compose to that?
The answer to all of your questions is yes. The music, let me address this in two sections. First of all, looking at the big picture, zoom out and look at the whole game as a whole, and you have a story here. The music itself evolved over the course of the game, so that, generally speaking, the music in the first third of the game sounds one way. And then when the main character realizes certain things, or a new character is introduced, or the character is betrayed by someone, or, you know, whatever happens, the music shifts. And then later in the game, when new information is revealed, the music generally shifts. So that there is this big picture sense of a narrative arc, okay? So music in the beginning, middle, and end of the game sounds, the actual sound of it and what it's emotionally saying is very different. Now, if you zoom in to a little microcosm, if you look at a mission by itself, the adaptability of that music is, I think, taken to an extreme. I generally don't speak in, I don't like to say that this is the most adaptive game that's ever been made, because I haven't played every game that's ever been made. However, sure. I think that SOCOM 4 is really pushing boundaries in terms of the adaptability of the music, and in terms of how often it shifts based on player decisions. It shifts based on random factors. It shifts based on AI. And, you know, I delivered music in so many different variations with so many different layers and so many different combinations. Our goal was to create a game that you could play from beginning to end and you would literally never hear the same piece of music played twice. And I think we got really close to that. What I always called the holy grail of video game scores would be a game score that never repeats.
Do you think, just real side question real quick, is there any game that's kind of come close in your mind to that sort of level before that you would draw comparison to?
Like I said, I never say never, but no, I have never personally played a game, and I play a lot. I have never played a game that I felt did this as well as it could be done.
And have you seen the finished product and you've gotten to sit down and play and you're happy with? Because
I have played a lot of the game, but I haven't played the whole game. I mean, it's you know, I can only comment as to, you know, where our mindset was and what our goals were, and you know, and I'm sure we weren't able to make it everything that we wanted, but our goal was pretty damn ambitious, if I may say so. I mean, our goal was to create the feeling that there's an orchestra in your living room, and there's a conductor watching you play, and the conductor is changing things as you are playing and completely tailoring that experience to you. Second of all, if you do the exact same things, if you play a level, if you die in a level and you go back and you play it again and you make the exact same movements, you still won't hear the same music. Now, that's something that, you know, I think it's very exciting.
Yeah,
and
no, definitely.
And actually, I should touch on the reason, because we didn't just do this to make it exciting or to have something to do. The reason we did this is that I find that game music frequently violates its primary function in terms of audience reaction. Game music is supposed to, 9 times out of 10, make you feel tension, suspense, fear, panic, adrenaline, excitement, any one of these emotions, okay? But the more you hear it, the less effective it is at doing exactly that. And ultimately, no matter how scary music inherently is, no matter how dissonant or fast or aggressive or spooky, once you've heard it 3 or 4 times, your brain categorizes it as something that's familiar, and it no longer has that impact. And you can see this happening in horror movies. You see it happening in games. You see it happening in television. It's just a way our brain is hardwired. And quite frankly, I think this goes back to our primordial caveman days, that, you know, a sound that is different out there in the woods is probably a lion that's going to eat you. So your brain automatically knows, pay attention to that. But then after a while, if it just keeps going and proves it's no threat, well, your brain knows as a survival instinct, that's not a threat, just ignore it. And you just, you know, It's like a car alarm outside your window. After 5 minutes, you don't even hear it anymore. So how does this apply to game music? Well, I think the answer is obvious, that the more you hear something, the less scary it is. And I think we can all think of examples of games that we've been playing that had one piece of music for every boss or one piece of music for most combat scenarios. And after a while, it's not doing what it needs to do. So when we set out to do SOCOM 4, we really decided to address this problem head on and try to make it so that in the game, you're hearing something different, subtly different. It doesn't have to be a completely unique piece of music. It's just a variation, an alternate orchestration. It's something that's different every time so that your brain can't relax. Your brain can't categorize it as something it's heard before. And I think the reaction to that is that gamers are going to be a little more on the edge of their seat because they're not familiar with the music. And I'm excited about that. And personally, I think this is the future of video game music. I think that whether or not we fully achieved it in SOCOM 4, this is where the industry is heading. And ultimately, where it needs to head to fully take advantage of the potential of the medium.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds incredibly ambitious. That's what I'm sitting here listening to you talk about, and I'm thinking, you know, if it's pulled off, it sounds like it'd be fantastic. And I also sit here and think, you know, the other if it's a failed implementation, you get just random, not working, incoherent.
Well, exactly, and that's why I, you know, when we were talking earlier about my finishing the music a year in advance, this is why, because the implementation is almost as important. I mean, yes, the music has to be good, but if it's implemented poorly, it doesn't matter. So we're really hoping this is, you know, what we're going for is a combination of music that's written well and produced well and implemented well.
You've got me, like, extremely curious about this thing now because I'm kind of a technical guy, so I'm just going to keep stabbing down this road. I'm just wondering, and I also have a little bit of background in music, too, so I'm really curious mm-hmm. as to how, like, was this, like, a full symphonic orchestra for the score?
Yes.
Or you just
Yes. In my music, you don't hear sampled instruments. You don't hear mock-ups. It's all real. And on the score to SOCOM 4, we had over 100 musicians and some really incredible ensembles. I mean, you're going to hear not only a full symphony orchestra, which you've heard in games before. That's nothing new.
Sure.
But we've also got a live gamelan orchestra, a live taiko ensemble, and then a group of about 6 or 7 specialty soloists playing Asian instruments from all kinds of traditions, including, you know, shakuhachi and bansuri and biwa and koto and erhu. I mean, really just an incredible array of Asian instrumentalists. And all of these things combined with custom electronics and analog synthesizers. And I mean, really, there's all these different sounds that combine to make the SOCOM 4 score so that, ironically to me, the symphonic orchestra that we had on every cue, that's actually, to me, the least interesting part of the score. I mean, and it's epic, and it's huge, and it's lyrical, and it's beautiful, but to me, it's almost overshadowed by these incredible ethnic soloists and the gamelan orchestra, which I had never heard in a video game before.
What's a gamelan?
Gamelan orchestra. There's a Google search away, but I'll get you started. Okay. The gamelan orchestra is an ensemble from Southeast Asia. It originated in Bali and Java. And it is a group of instrumentalists playing wooden and metallic pitched percussion instruments.
Okay.
The closest analogy is like a marimba and xylophone in Western music, but it sounds nothing like that.
Sure.
The sound is very ethereal and very dreamy. It's very hypnotic. They play very long patterns that repeat and change for various reasons. But the whole philosophy behind gamelan music is very different than Western music. It's not the kind of structural sonata form, you know, inspired classical. It's really more like Indian music. It almost kind of lulls you into a trance. Well, I took a gamelan orchestra and decided that rather than using them to create these very peaceful, serene patterns, I would use them to signify violence and combat. And so you hear these phrases that are really aggressive and really foreign sounding. I mean, ultimately, the thing that makes a gamelan orchestra, I think, very unique to a Western audience is that the scale is not the 12-note scale you hear when you run your hands up a piano key. The notes are a different tuning. And what happens is the more you hear it, it kind of rewires your brain into thinking that that scale is normal. And then when you start hearing a Western piano or a Western orchestra, that can start sounding dissonant just because the notes don't sound right. And so in combining these two things, I found it really heightened the tension so that, you know, just hearing notes in one scale superimposed over notes in another, and certain ones line up and others don't, I mean, it's just this absolutely unique sound. And so a huge part of the SOCOM score for me was taking this very unique Asian ensemble, the gamelan, and combining it with a Western orchestra and seeing where I could combine them for effects that were pleasing, where I could combine them for effects that were very dissonant and harsh. And it creates a sound that is totally unique. And one of the things that's exciting is that it symbolizes the inherent narrative conflict that's happening in the game. In the game, you have Western forces against local Southeast Asian guerrilla fighters. And what better way to symbolize that than to have a Western orchestra literally clashing with an indigenous ensemble? I thought that the narrative philosophical statement there was really exciting.
Yeah, it sounds like you really, to line this up with the story, and it sounds like you also really challenge yourself and push yourself. I mean, are these new instruments that you've, have you had experience working with these type of ensembles before? I mean, is this a new direction for you?
I had some, and in fact, I think that experience is one of the reasons that Sony and Zipper hired me in the first place, because I had done a lot of this on a TV series called Battlestar Galactica.
Sure, yeah.
Where I used a lot of taiko drums. Yeah, okay. That score was very world music influenced, and among the influences that Battlestar Galactica had, there was a lot of Asian instrumentation. So the thing that made SOCOM exciting was that I was able to really dive in and further research these sounds. And the gamelan in particular, I had never worked with a gamelan for Battlestar. I mean, just logistically, to do that on a TV series would be impossible because, you know, the gamelan orchestra is like 30 people and it's truckloads of instruments that need to be brought into a studio. It's not practical. But to be able to explore that in a video game, where we had the budget to do that, you know, of course that was very exciting for me. And also just to address your other point about challenges, I find that I basically only take on projects that I can challenge myself with. I don't like to do the same thing twice. I like to challenge myself, and if I find a project that will force me to learn about a new style of music or learn about a new instrument or just push my limits as a composer and as an orchestrator, those are the projects that I'm drawn to, and those are the projects that I'm the most passionate about. And I can think of almost no better example of that than SOCOM 4, because SOCOM 4 took everything I knew as an orchestral writer and as a writer of ethnic music, and forced me to up my game on both styles.
Yeah, I was wondering about that, because you seem to have I'm going to stray just a little bit from SOCOM here, and then we'll come back, but you seem to have a pretty diverse career. You know, obviously Battlestar Galactica is huge, you know, and some other big TV shows like The Walking Dead and The Cape. And then you've done a fair share of movies and short films as well. And I was wondering how you ended up, I guess Dark Void was your first video game, right? Is that correct?
Yeah.
I was wondering how you kind of got into that project and what the draw was for you there. Because, you know, I don't think, maybe this is happening more nowadays, but I don't see a lot of crossover in musicians from, you know, movies, television over into video game realm.
I think you will see more crossover, but that's a different conversation. Dark Void was a really exciting project, and I highly encourage anybody who has heard Battlestar and has heard Walking Dead and is enjoying what they're hearing on SOCOM 4, to check out the Dark Void album, because that really was some of the most ambitious music I'd ever written. And in many ways, Dark Void kind of opened the door to video games for me, because prior to that, I hadn't done any video games. I grew up playing video games. You know, I've been thinking about what I want video game music to do since I was 5 years old. So for me, it really wasn't any question of moving from television to games or from television to movies. Like, these are all genres that I have always been interested in. I shouldn't say genres; they are mediums that I've always been interested in. And like I said, you know, when we first started talking, the thing that appealed to me in SOCOM and in Dark Void was the story and the setting and the ability to tell ultimately what is an emotional story, to be able to find that emotional core. That's what's exciting to me. And ultimately, games in that regard are no different than film or TV. If a game has no story, it's not something that I'm ultimately as interested in. You know, I'm not interested in writing action cues that don't go anywhere, or ambient moody underscore that has no narrative purpose. So in that way, you know, Dark Void and SOCOM 4 really are just, to me, like big movies that happen to have details of implementation that have to be remembered as you're writing. But ultimately, in terms of the way I write character themes, the way I approach the integration of those themes into action cues, it's just like Battlestar or Human Target or The Cape, or, you know, for that matter, Step Up 3D or Wrong Turn 2. I mean, any of these things that I've done, I always approach from the same place.
I actually wanted to ask you about, what are the differences and some of the different challenges that you see working, you know, between video games, television, movies, and even, like, live orchestra performances, because I know you do some of that stuff, too.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, I don't really see that much difference. I really don't. Of all the things you cited, the one that is the most different is working with a live ensemble. And being able to do some of that, being able to perform my music in front of an audience with the actual musicians who created it in the studio originally, that's a whole nother can of worms. But it is so rewarding. It's so exciting to be able to perform that music in front of the audience and get that immediate visceral reaction. That's something that when you create music for media, you're deprived of. You don't get to play a piece of music, create it with an instrument, and then immediately get that response from somebody. So to me, that playing live, even though it takes a lot of time and I don't necessarily have a lot of time throughout the year to be able to do that, it's something that I have done a lot of and I plan to continue doing, because it's that missing part of my musical life. It's that one part of my musical life that is not complete when I'm working in the studio.
You gotta scratch that itch.
Exactly.
So I want to jump back to the real quick again, because again, you've got me kind of fascinated by this, the technical aspects of the mm-hmm. dynamic music you were talking about. So we were talking mm-hmm. about recording this with a full ensemble or full orchestra and some various ensembles, and I'm interested mm-hmm. when you're composing, and we're talking about this dynamic thing again, and I'm going to try to not get lost in this question here, but are you just writing full complete pieces and just integrating those, and then they're chopping them up to use in the dynamic, or are you recording phrases and parts of the song and then they're mixing those?
It's hard to explain. And honestly, it just depended on the various missions. I mean, each one was approached a little differently. So there is no general rule. Sometimes I wrote complete or relatively complete pieces, but I would always make sure that they're written and delivered in such a way that they could be easily reconfigured. Other times, I was writing shorter much shorter pieces. I don't use the word phrases, because to me, that approach in games creates music that just feels kind of random. I mean, if you're just writing a little phrase, it's not musical. And that's the balance that we tried to strike with SOCOM 4. I had to write music in such a way that technically the developers had maximum control over it, but not so much control that it would ultimately make the music feel jagged or random. Because again, it's not enough that the music just change. If your only goal is that the music adapts constantly, that's actually relatively easy.
Yeah.
The challenge is you want to make it feel authentic. You want to make it feel like there's a composer writing for you while you're playing the game. And that required just a lot of collaboration between me and the development team. So, ultimately, the technical side of it was all on Sony and Zipper's side. Mostly, my side of it was dealing with the creative issues, was dealing with finding a way to make the shorter and the longer pieces and the various layers that acted as sort of a foundation, to make them all musically make sense, to make sure that they are written in such a way that they are still telling a story, that they're emotional, that they are communicating the feeling that I want the gamer to feel. But also, I'm not so set in stone that it has to still function if it's played back in different order, if it's played back in different layers, if it's played back in different combinations, or if certain segments are removed. It was a very complex process. And when I say I finished a year ago, I started 3 years ago. So this was two solid years of sketching and writing. And even that, we delivered the final cinematics maybe 6 or 7 months ago. So it was basically a 3 year process for me and the development team to be able to pull off something this complex. And I do also think it's worth mentioning that when we first met, the developers and I sat down and we're just talking about general ideas, general approaches we could use. And, when I was asking them about how to do some of this stuff, I usually just, when I'm working with a video game developing company, I just start asking questions. Can we do this? Can you do that? And the answer to most of these questions was no, but we'll get back to you. And a few months later, the Sony guys, in particular, the guy spearheading this, his name was Monty Mudd, and Keith Leary at Sony. These two guys figured out a way to make this possible. So I do think that the uniqueness of the PlayStation hardware is a huge step in being able to do something that you can't do on an Xbox. On an Xbox, you've just got limitations in terms of storage. I mean, right there, you've got a major bottleneck that you can only fit so many minutes of music on the disc. And, with SOCOM 4, I mean, I delivered 9 hours of music for that game. So that alone, I mean, right there, that's almost the complete single-player mission right there. And that's not even counting all the adaptability and variation. So there's, I think there's a lot of things coming together to make SOCOM 4 a unique experience for gamers.
You were touching a little bit there on the kind of like the working things out with the developers. I'm pretty interested in that. And
uh-huh.
I was wondering, you talked a little bit, obviously you were influenced because you've played the previous SOCOM games. You kind of talked about that a little bit, but I'm wondering when you first are meeting with these guys, they've got their vision for their game, obviously where they want to take it, gameplay, graphics, all that,
yeah.
Even the full Monty, including your music and everything. Are they sitting down and saying, this is the direction that we'd like to see you take with the music? Or is it like, here is our idea for the game. This is what we want to do gameplay. This is what we want to do graphically, visually, and all that. You run with it and make it work? Like, where's your leeway there?
Well, I have I have been in every situation. You know, I have been in ones where I had complete leeway. I've been in ones where producers had very specific ideas. And honestly, I think part of this is just it's almost hard to remember because that early conversation was 2.5 or 3 years ago.
Sure.
But honestly, I think that Sony and Zipper and I really did meet in the middle. I mean, it was a really even kind of 50-50 balance because they knew a lot about what they wanted. They knew they wanted music that drew from local colors, that drew from, I mean, Southeast Asian sounds. They knew they wanted some amount of orchestra because the previous games had that, and it just, you know, there's a grandness, a grandeur with orchestral music that is very appealing. But I brought a lot of detail into those ideas. We want to use Southeast Asian instruments. Well, which instruments? And how do we want to use them? And which instruments are going to signify certain characters and signify certain events? How are we going to use the gamelan? How are we going to use the orchestra? There was an even bigger question. Because I felt very strongly that I did not feel this game was the kind of epic brass fanfare that the previous Socom games had. I mean, I felt like this game is just a little more layered narratively. It's just a little more complex, and you're talking about a sort of multinational force working together. I just felt like there was an orchestral bombast in the previous games that was cool and appropriate, but I didn't think it would work in SOCOM 4. So one of the bigger questions we had was, well, where do we use the orchestra and how do we use it? And you're going to hear that, you know, the orchestra never really rises above the Asian instrumentation. There's never really moments where it's all orchestra. And, these were questions that, you know, just you need the composer to really think about, and these are problems that really only the composer can tackle. But it was great being able to work with them because they did have a strong vision for what they wanted. And that was helpful because it meant immediately we're all on the same page and we could almost in our first meeting just start getting into the details, getting into the nitty gritty. How are we going to do this and how are we going to make it work?
One other thing you had mentioned earlier that I was interested in, you were talking about the multiplayer versus the single player. And we've talked a lot about the single player and the dynamics, and you mentioned kind of some of the problems that, you know, with music in multiplayer gaming, because, you know, you're obviously, like you said, your core focus, especially in a game like SOCOM, where you're very heavily team-oriented, you know, talking with your teammates is, you know, numero uno on the priority list. How do you go about balancing that, trying to still provide an interesting aural experience when you're weighing with the voice?
I don't know if the... Well, let me put it this way. And this is not even discussing so much my approach on SOCOM specifically, but just my philosophy in general. Your goals with multiplayer games are entirely different. Multiplayer games really are a completely different animal. You know, so to create the vibe, to create the mood, really, the best opportunity you have, as goofy as this sounds, is the menu screen.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
Is loading music, is a little piece of music that plays when you respawn and plays when you die, or plays when an objective is completed. Outside of those core areas, really, music is distracting and ultimately takes away from the collaborative heightened reality that you need in a multiplayer game. And so in that regard, it really is a very different experience than the kind of immersive narrative experience you're trying to create in a single-player game. So ironically, even though it's the same engine, it's the same graphics, it's the same control when you're playing SOCOM 4 multiplayer, musically it was a whole different approach, and ultimately was much simpler. I mean, all of the nuance that I'm talking about really applies to the single player narrative.
I think it's you know, as I'm sitting here listening to you talk about the single player versus the multiplayer, and I'm thinking, you know, because you've had this career where you've done TVs and movies, and I was thinking coming into this that, you know, man, it must kind of stink to actually deal with the music in the multiplayer where you're dealing with people talking over what you've got going on, versus like where, you know, most people when they're playing a single player game, they're sitting there silently, and then, you know, you maybe have your cutscenes where you've got your characters speaking and interacting, but for the most part, your music can do your thing. But then now that I'm thinking about this, sitting here listening to you talk, it almost seems like you'd be more at home kind of a little bit with the multiplayer compared to like TV, because TV, you've got that dialogue going the entire time, talking, you're working around that. I mean, so do you think that maybe even the multiplayer is a little more similar to the other mediums that you've worked in than the single player?
You know, ultimately, yes, that what you are saying is true, that there is, there's always competitive dialogue in film or TV, but ultimately it's not similar in that it's narrative music. And, you know, again, I think you're thinking too much about the specific. You're zooming, you've got your camera zoomed in too far. You've got to zoom back and look at an episode of TV or even a series as a bigger picture. And the music needs to comment on that bigger picture. And frequently television music does not, but the best television music does. And in that same way, you're telling a story over a long period of time. So what is, you know, when you look at a specific scene, or in the case of a video game, a specific level, or a specific cutscene, whatever, what, in terms of the big picture, the long story, what do we want to say? And in that regard, video games are, to me, exactly like film and TV. Multiplayer does not have that. Multiplayer is not about getting from point A to point B. It's not about following a story. It's about collaborating with your friends, and it's very much, it's a much more interactive environment, but it's just not a narrative one. And that's not to say that there aren't multiplayer games that are like that, and there will be more in the future, but generally speaking, they're more about the microcosm of right now. Multiplayer games are about this thing that is happening right now, and a single-player game, like a film or TV, is about what's happening now in the bigger context of what happened before and what's going to happen next. So I think that ultimately is where music has a totally different function. I mean, I think if I could generalize it, and it's funny that I've actually never really thought about this because no one else has even asked me about it, but I think that's the biggest difference between those two, that is it in multiplayer, you're dealing with the instantaneous, and in single-player and in narrative media, you are dealing with the larger picture at all times. You're always thinking about, well, how does this piece of music fit in with the last one, and how does it lead into the next one?
Yeah, I'm very interested to see how this all plays out, because, you know, SOCOM kind of always seems to be like the multiplayer focus, and I'm very intrigued by the nuance that you're talking about that's kind of added here.
I mean, the multiplayer beta is out. I've played it, and it's a lot of fun, and I think and the reviews have been really positive. But I think what's really going to surprise people when the game ships is the emphasis on the single player and how good it is, and how the cinematics and the storytelling really have been taken to a new level in SOCOM 4. It's not an afterthought at all. I mean, really, it's been a priority from the beginning. And I think fans of the franchise and gamers in general are going to be thrilled.
Yeah, I hope everyone's got their patience on and doesn't just go right to multiplayer, you know, and does take the time to experience that thing. You know, I guess that can always be kind of a little bit of a concern when we're talking a game like that or Black Ops or any games where people think of them as historically multiplayer, you know.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Maybe jump around. We don't have too much more time, so if as long as you're still okay to talk, maybe jump around. A couple other things. So I think we really covered SOCOM 4 pretty nicely. And I would just maybe want to jump in a little more to your background to start. So are you're a California native? Is that right? Or grew up in California?
I am not, and I did not. I grew up in Bellingham, Washington, which is in near Seattle. In the Pacific Northwest.
Oh, okay. But you went to school just in California then?
Yeah, I went to college here. I came down here to go to the music school at the University of Southern California.
So what got you into your start in music and composing? Obviously, if you went to school, that was probably your first big step in that direction. But what was like kind of the precursors to that and your music, your inspirations?
I have always wanted to write music for movies and TV and video games. That's literally all I've ever wanted to do.
Really?
So
that's amazing.
That's it. I mean, when I was 5 years old, I knew what I wanted to do. And I was destined to, I mean, I started collecting, you know, soundtrack albums, first on cassette, and then replaced them all on CD. But I was destined to either become a soundtrack nerd or a professional musician. And in my case, I became both.
Was there like a seminal, sorry to cut you off there, was there a seminal like experience there when you were 5 years old that was just, you know, like something like Star Wars or something like that where it just like clicked for you? Or,
you know, probably was there one? There were so many I can't even count. The one that stands out in my memory as being the most visceral was seeing Back to the Future and hearing Alan Silvestri's score.
Yeah.
That was the first time that I did not even know that soundtrack albums existed. So I snuck a tape recorder into the movie theater. I guess these are my beginning of my pirate bootlegging days. I snuck a little kid-sized cassette recorder in there and recorded it so that I could listen to the main titles and end credits at home. And then a few months later, I saw that, my God, people put music for movies on cassette tape, you know? and that was really the beginning of the end. But by the time I was 6 or 7 or 8, I would watch movies in the theater or on video, and I would turn to my parents and before the credits even rolled, I would say, that sounds like Danny Elfman. That sounds like John Williams. That sounds like Alan Silvestri. When I was in high school, my friends and I, we'd all go see some stupid action movie, and they would all be talking about the set pieces or the hot chick, and all I would talk about is, did you hear that French horn solo Jerry Goldsmith wrote? Oh my God, he took the theme and he turned it upside down. That was so cool. Stuff like that. I mean, that's all I ever thought about. And in high school, I started writing music. I started writing music a little earlier, but really in high school is when I got super serious about it. And I just wrote music after school and over the summers all the time. That's all I did. So it was, I mean, really, it was sort of inevitable because it's all I ever thought about and all I ever wanted to do.
Man, that's awesome. You meet very few people who have that kind of straight arrow from the start of their life to the where they end up, and I always love hearing those stories, you know?
Yeah, it is. It's a little weird, but at the same time, you know, I've literally never had that conversation with myself. Well, what do I want to do? There were times when I thought about doing something else maybe when I was a kid, but I never really took it that seriously. I just never, you know, my grades were okay in other areas, but it just, especially by the time it became time to apply to colleges, I had at that point connected with Elmer Bernstein, who was one of the greatest film composers to have ever lived. Mm-hmm. And I met him and I just asked him, where does one go to learn how to do this? And he said, go to USC and move down to LA. So that was it. That's what I did. There were no backup plans. So that's how I ended up here.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Was that just like a chance meeting with him? How did you?
Basically, it was a chance meeting. I was 16 and I was awarded the Student of the Month honor for the local Rotary Club. This is a thing that for kids that had high GPAs, it was just resume fodder. It was just something you could put on your college application. So they did this presentation and they said, you know, he's wants to study film music. He's, you know, his heroes are, you know, Danny Elfman and Elmer Bernstein and Bernard Herrmann, you know, whatever. And so this guy comes up to me and says that he actually is friends with Elmer Bernstein, who, as it turns out, kept a sailboat in the town that I grew up in because it was the last town on the water before you hit British Columbia. So he would take his sailboat up every summer. So he actually knew this guy, and through him, he sent a recording of some of the pieces I had been writing. And ultimately, the next time Elmer was in town, Elmer met with me, and then I actually began a long sort of 7 or 8 year relationship where he took me under his wing and taught me the tools of the trade and gave me my first professional jobs and, really had a huge impact on me both creatively and personally. I mean, this was a guy, it's hard to put into words how much this guy's music meant to me before I even met him, and so to be able to work with him and to be able to, like, for example, one summer I worked in his studio archiving his materials, which are now actually housed at a special collection at the USC Library. These were scores and manuscripts and press clippings and just, he had all this stuff in boxes, but it wasn't organized by year or by project. So I would go through and I would, find a score, and it didn't, you couldn't see what project it was from. So I'd sit there and read it. I would read the handwritten orchestral sketches and have to figure out, oh, that's To Kill a Mockingbird. Okay, that goes in the To Kill a Mockingbird pile, or that's The Great Escape, or The Magnificent Seven. And then at the end of every day, he would come into the studio and help me figure out all the stuff that I couldn't figure out on my own. Now, put that in the context of a musical and historical education. There is nothing more valuable than that kind of one-on-one experience with a composer, but also with that history. I was able to read these sketches and see what The Magnificent Seven looked like before anyone had ever heard it. This is what it looked like when it came out of his brain. I mean, this is an amazing experience for me. And another summer, I reorchestrated a film he did, a 1968 film called Kings of the Sun, starring Yul Brynner. This film had been, at the time, had been lost. No one had put it on TV, and it wasn't on DVD. The scores had been destroyed. The tapes had been destroyed. There was nothing left but his handwritten sketches. And so I reorchestrated it from scratch, and he was in the final recording sessions of his life, re-recorded it. And it's out on CD now, and he also, in the final years of his life, played this concert suite that I had orchestrated in concerts around the world. So that, again, was just an incredible learning experience.
Sounds incredible. So did he kind of help you? I was kind of wondering how you, and I feel like I got to ask at least one Battlestar Galactica question, or else readers are probably going to call me an idiot for not even bringing that up. Did he kind of get you into that, the Battlestar gig?
Not at all.
How did that happen?
Not at all. With Battlestar, I was working for and with Richard Gibbs, who was the composer of the miniseries. And Richard Gibbs, I worked with him as his assistant, and when he worked on Battlestar, there was a huge amount of material to generate in an incredibly short period of time. So I contributed to some of the percussion cues and some of the action cues while Richard was writing a lot of the thematic material. And ultimately, when the show went to series, Richard wasn't able to stick around because he had a lot of feature films going on at the time. And, he is a feature film composer. And so it just made sense that they give me a shot at it, and the rest is history.
Yeah, did you have, when you were getting into that, did you have any idea, how special that project would end up being, ultimately?
Absolutely. There was, the first episode that I scored myself was the first episode of the first season, an episode called 33. And as I'm watching this, man, I was watching it. I was watching a rough cut with incomplete visual effects and a temp score, but I knew it's like this is something special, and I felt that way about the miniseries as well. But really, it was seeing 33 when I realized that that the series was going to not only be as good as the miniseries, but really was going to be even better, and take it to a whole nother level. Yeah, absolutely. That was that was crystal clear from a very early stage.
Yeah, I mean, that first episode's got to be one of the best first episodes of any television series ever. I mean, just what a great start, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it also sends a strong statement that it's not, you know, it's not going to back down from the miniseries. It's only going to get better, you know?
Yeah, and I think Battlestar is, and you were talking about television, you know, a lot of shows kind of, maybe it's an afterthought with the music. And I think Battlestar especially was always highly recognized for having outstanding music.
Yeah, well, if I could make a general statement about Battlestar, I think the thing that it did and that has since influenced my thinking on all television series, most television series want the music to create a sound and then remain in the background and do not change that sound. The idea is that once you establish what the show sounds like, you never change it so that everybody knows what show they're watching. And Battlestar really wanted to do something different. And the show evolved. The show changed. The characters changed. It was very much based on large story arcs. And so I had no choice but to evolve the music as well. And in the early stages, I don't think I could have ever... I knew the show would be a hit, but I had no idea how far the music would go. I really didn't. And it was a long incremental process of realizing, oh, this character's changing. Adama's becoming more of a caring father figure. He's not just the stern military commander. So here's one episode where I can bring in some bagpipes. And then suddenly, well, now that I have bagpipes, I guess I can continue to use them. And, you know, we start bringing in a little orchestra. We start bringing in more Japanese instruments, more Middle Eastern instruments. Well, now some rock and roll. Just a taste of it. Okay, well, now we have heavy metal Bob Dylan. Okay, well, now we can do that. You know, and now there's an Italian aria, and now there's Armenian music. And it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger until by the end, the final season, but especially the final episode, is this huge, swashbuckling, thematic, orchestral, lyrical symphony, basically. I mean, it's a symphonic experience. The absolute antithesis of the philosophy of the first episode, and yet it all fit, you know? It was a natural musical journey. And ever since then, you know, whenever I take on a series, I look for those opportunities to evolve and change, and you hear it. Although, to be fair, I don't know that any show will ever have a score that evolves and adapts in the ways that Battlestar did, and especially for fans that got to the end and saw what happened with the music in particular in the fourth season. I mean, it was not even just the score anymore. I mean, it really entered into the world of the characters in such a literal and figurative way. I don't think anyone had done that before, and I don't know that anyone ever will. It was very bizarre, but it's super exciting. I mean, what an incredible opportunity for a young musician to take part in.
Definitely. Okay, so I think maybe we got like one or two more minutes left. I just want to maybe hit some quick lightning round questions with you, if you don't mind, just super quick.
Sure.
What's the most fulfilling project you've ever worked on?
Fulfilling? Oh, my God.
At the end of the day, favorite, most fulfilling.
I almost don't think I could pick that, but if I had to pick one, I would probably guess Battlestar Galactic, only because it was 6 years of my life.
Yeah. Okay. How about what would be your dream project to work on? Something that no one's done yet, but if you could score anything, what would it be?
Boy, you got some tough ones. I don't know. Maybe a live action badass gothic serious Mega Man movie. That would be.
I think that would be extremely successful.
Mega Man Begins. There you go.
Dude, call Nolan up. I'm sure he'd probably love to do that.
Let's do it, man.
And let's see here. What's next for you after SOCOM?
Well, I am working on The Walking Dead season 2, and looking forward to coming back with that. I think it's going to be even better, and hopefully, you know, the music will get to even be more spooky and creepy, and it's just a really exciting musical experience for me to be able to play around with this story. I'm also doing a movie called Knights of Badassdom, which is as awesome as it sounds like it would be. And that comes out later in the year, and it's got songs and score that I've done for it. And otherwise, I'm just working on some soundtrack album stuff at the moment. I'm hoping to put out an album for The Cape in the next couple of months, and then the next thing I'm going to work on, because fans are really bugging me about it, is a soundtrack album for the full season of Caprica, which has some great music in it and deserves to be released.
Awesome. And just very last but not least, just if you just want to talk just for 1 minute, I saw you're involved with the Play for Japan, the album. I don't know if you maybe want to mention that and what you're doing for that.
Well, it's a little too early to mention what I'm doing, but I can say that I'm thrilled to have the opportunity to use my talents for good and to be able to contribute to a cause that is as worthy as this. And also, just on a side and personal note, to be able to collaborate on this project with Mitsuda and Uematsu and the guys that wrote the music that I grew up listening to when I played video games is very exciting. So when they asked me to be involved, I leapt at the opportunity.
Awesome. Is that going to be something looking for new music from you there?
I think it's still too early to know. We're still figuring it out, but definitely keep an eye out on their website and on my blog in the coming weeks. Once we know exactly what we're doing, we will let everybody know.
All right, great. Sounds really, really good. Well, hey, again, I thank you so much for your time, man. It was really a pleasure talking to you. I really, really enjoyed it. So.
You bet. Thanks.
All right, that was Bear McCreary, the composer of SOCOM 4. SOCOM 4 releases Tuesday, April 19th, exclusively for the PlayStation 3. For more information about the game, check out www.socom.com. That's SOCOM.com. Bear's score for SOCOM 4 is available now on iTunes and also the PlayStation Network. And an expanded two-disc version of the CD will be available May 10th from La La Land Records. To check out more of Bear's work for photography, behind-the-scenes looks, interviews, and also Bear's personal blog, head over to bearmccreary.com. That's www.bearmccreary.com. So there's two C's in McCreary. This show was produced and edited by Matthew Root for Blast Magazine. For the latest gaming news, reviews, and features, head to blastmagazine.com/games. Special thanks to Scott Pitlick, Kevin Porter, and Joe Sinicki, and of course Bear McCreary for taking the time to speak with me. And finally, thanks to you, the listener, for tuning in. We're going to close out here with a little music of Bear's from SOCOM 4. Until next time.